yes, I'm having a good time.
Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Happy Friday to everyone. Our pal Ricky Horton joins us. Hello, Rick.
Hey, Dave. How are you? What's going on?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Hey, before we talk Cardinals, I need a callback to hour number one, where we had quite a heated debate. And I need to get your call on this. So you're out to dinner with your son and a new girlfriend. And it's the second or third time that you've met her, and she's fine. Seems a little controlling, but she's okay. And you go to Texas Roadhouse, and your son orders a ribeye. And when they bring it, she reaches over and cuts up his steak for him.
Ooh. Ooh. And my son is capable of doing it.
He's fully physically capable, yes.
So the question is, what do I do and how do I react?
Yeah, like the guy who emailed me said, it weirded my wife and I out, and I kind of want to talk to my son and say, son, that was weird, what's going on, but, you know, to each their own. And we had a heated battle here.
Oh, you had a heated battle? Am I the deciding vote or something?
Yes, you are.
This is exciting. Oh, my goodness. I would be very, let's call that the reddest of red flags. How's that? In terms of controlling. So I would be concerned about that, yes.
Ricky, we're on the same team.
I wouldn't say anything at the moment. Wouldn't say good. I'm on your team. That's exciting. So I would not say anything at the Texas Roadhouse, but at some point along the line I'd have the antenna up and I would make my thoughts known.
Okay. We had a second email.
Dave, did you come down on that one? Because it was all of us kind of going back. And did you have a take on that?
No, I never have to have takes.
Dave just lights the fire.
That's what you do.
He lights the fire and runs.
You get us in trouble. I get it. I see how this works. Yeah. You guys get in trouble. Hey, I just asked the question. It wasn't me. I can see. I see you. I see you working now, Dave.
Welcome to your first show, boys. Yeah, of course. Okay, here's the other email I got. So next spring training, you and I go out for dinner, and there's that little putt-putt right there in Jupiter. I'm like, hey, Rick, let's go play some putt-putt golf. And you have had half of a Shirley Temple, so you're kind of tanked. And
not having a hard time imagining this yet, but go ahead.
So we get ready for hole number one, and I say, oh, hold on a second. And I run to my car, and I pull the putter out of my golf bag to use my good putter playing putt-putt. Is that a red flag?
You're going to end up playing that round by yourself. That's what I'm saying. So by the way, I did go out to dinner with my son in LA and his girlfriend, and she did not cut his steak. So that's, it literally just happened. And you and I have played golf together. So these are two pretty prescient kind of questions and emails. Somebody's really onto something here, but no, you can't bring your putt. That's like bringing your own pool cue, right? And in the, you know, if you're in a championship or something, pool stick. I mean, I'm sorry. That's too much for me.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Team Ricky.
It's like would you bring your own Titleist too? And I only putt Titleist. I only putt Pro V1s.
You better not let that
forget
last
that yellow one. Forget that green and orange and yellow one. I got my Pro V1 here.
Yeah, just don't putt that one on the last hole where he eats the ball.
No, a good call.
All right, Wheels, my good work call. Here is done. You take over the baseball part.
Well, what's interesting, Rick, obviously, you know, you guys are back home now and getting into a bit of a homestand. Yesterday was a lot. I don't even really know the best way to describe it, because the first inning felt like, oh, hey, we're on our way, and then it kind of just petered out.
Yeah.
And then Brandon Pfaadt figured it out, and the pitching side was not strong yesterday.
No, it really wasn't. And, you know, McGreevy was not at his best. He's typically very kind of steady, but he just wasn't, you know, he just wasn't at his best. And honestly, you know, you could say Arizona's on a hot streak, which they are. I mean, they've come out of nowhere to all of a sudden be the third. So, you know, some of it's that playing, you know, the old playing the wrong team at the wrong time kind of moment. But you know, we've still got to figure out, you know, I know their bottom of the lineup was way better than our bottom of the lineup. But I still think the top of our lineup is still what matters most. We have to have JJ and Yvonne, who was off yesterday, and he's been, I think, playing a lot. Clearly, that's his first day off. But he and Walker and Burleson, those guys are really still going to drive the offense. Everybody else can contribute. But, you know, we've got to get it back to getting those 6-7 runs a game, which we had when the team was winning more.
It's a fascinating thing because, you know, the guys you mentioned, Ricky, the top four guys, I mean, Herrera was out. So that's just Weatherholt, Walker, Burleson and Newt. They were 9-for-19 yesterday.
Yeah,
but many guys stranded because the guys who started the starting lineup, the 5 through 9, went 3-for-17 or whatever it was. And, you know, when this team got hot about, what would you say, about 6 weeks ago, when Nathan Church came up and he like took over in center and he was playing really well. Yeah. Newt was hot when he came up for about 3 or 4 weeks. Like the lineup started to look like, okay, we can see it. But now it feels like it's kind of gone backward.
Yeah, it has for the short term, and you got to hope that kind of corrects itself. You know, I think one of the great sayings that John Rooney loves to say, and John is so obviously great at what he does, but when he uses the phrase, "You got to get the line moving," I mean that is baseball. I mean that is, and when you get the line moving, there's not just, you know, everybody hitting in the same inning. It's one thing you get 9 hits, but if they're all spread out, you might not, maybe you don't score, but you got to get it. You got to get it in the line. You got to get it moving. You got to get hits in bunches, and you have to have some thump in the midst of that. And, you know, when you do get the line moving, that creates momentum. We lost momentum, even though we scored 2 runs in the first inning. We lost momentum at the end of that first, and I don't think we ever got it back.
Ricky, anything stand out to you about Ivan Herrera lately? Because, he's still very selective, getting on base at a very high clip, not only for the season, but, you know, overall. But the power's not there, especially compared to last year. It's down almost 100 points of slug from last year. And again, this may just be the low point of the year, and he finishes strong and the numbers look like they would. But is there anything that seems apparent to you, or is it just one of those stretches?
Well, I love Ivan Herrera. I mean, he's one of my favorite players, really, that I've ever covered. He's just likable. He's honest. He's, you know, I mean, he really is just a special guy to be around. He was saying, and he said it yesterday, that he wasn't tired. And I don't know a player that's going to go out and say that I am tired,
right.
But I think he has been. I think he has been. And he, you know, he can argue with me, and that's fine. I mean, and maybe he's right and I'm wrong, but I just see a slower bat. I don't see the quick hands that I saw, you know, when he was driving the baseball and hitting home runs. And you've got to be quick to turn on the pitch inside and hit the ball 400 feet, which he's capable of doing. And I think he'll get there. But I think it's, you know, is he tired in that he's not getting his sleep and he's not no, it's not that.
Right.
But there's a baseball tired and there's a tired.
Right.
And I think he's a little bit baseball tired right now, in my opinion.
Is some of that readjusting to catching more? Because, you know, he doesn't catch a lot, right? I mean, he DHs 60% of the time. But he didn't catch much at all last year.
No, he didn't. And I do think catching is part of that. And I think the fact that he literally played every single day, and you say, well, you know, he didn't catch every day because he got the DH, but you're still mentally engaged in what's going on. You're going through all the paces of batting practice and getting ready. And so, and I will say the Cardinals, better than any team I've been around in a long time, this Cardinal team and their coaches make sure that they don't overwork guys. And, you know, you take days off, you don't hit every day, all that. But I think, you know, Ivan loves to hit. He loves to play. You know, he loves to bring energy to every situation. And sometimes you just, you know, my mom always used to say, hey, you look tired, take a nap. You know, and I think sometimes you just need to have somebody tell you that, for goodness sakes. And we all do. And I think in a sense, that's what we're dealing with Ivan.
And the one guy that hasn't wavered, well, there are a few guys. I mean, Alec Burleson's been pretty consistent. Obviously, JJ's been pretty consistent. Yeah. But we've seen zero wavering from Jordan Walker. Like he's as good,
amazing?
Right? He's as good in July right now as he was at his hottest at any point earlier in the year.
I'm not sure what month it was. It was maybe 6 weeks in when he went off on that tear at the beginning, and then he had he was 0-for-10, and we're like, we didn't say that, but there was a voice out there, and he overcame that voice. But I mean, I don't hear that anymore. Nobody's saying, oh, this 100 games is a fluke. I mean, nobody's saying that. I mean, they were wondering about 10 games being a fluke, but not 100. And he has been consistent. He looks, by the way, just looking at him, I saw clips of him doing an interview yesterday. His biceps, I mean, don't mess with that guy. He is strong. He's definitely visibly stronger. He's actually taller than he was last year, and obviously a lot better.
It's been a that has been, you know, Bernie's. We're going to talk about this tonight on Rush Hour, a little tease, because Bernie Miklas mentioned this in his video today, and I was thinking this just like last night when I was watching the game and thinking about it. I know this is not going to be appealing to a lot of fans. Nobody wants to think of it this way yet, because we're still 2 months away from the end of the year. But I'm already of the opinion that this season is a success, even if there's no playoffs, even if you end up with a losing record. The fact that Jordan Walker is established as a real power guy, that J.J. Weatherholt is a star, that so many players in the system have taken big leaps and are getting closer and closer. You're starting to see, like, I guess this is the difference. A year ago, I'm not so sure that the path to when the team is a consistent contender was as clear. It sure looks a lot clearer right now.
It looks clearer. The team's more fun. There's more energy. There's more pieces, like young pieces that you can envision being around for a while. I mean, if your pieces that are performing are 32 and your other guys aren't, then you've got a lot of spaces. And you're like, well, I can't, too many things to cover. But you're talking about getting production from guys like Weatherholt and Wynn and Walker. And they're young. You know, they're very young. All of them are McGreevy. They're all young. So you feel way better about that, I think, in this case. And, you know, it's a little bit like, you know, and I think the point is, you know, you're pitching in a game and you're in the seventh inning. You don't want to say, hey, this was a great game no matter what I do in the eighth and the ninth. You can't think that way. And players aren't going to talk that way. And Aldi's not going to manage that way. They're going to run to the finish line no matter what that is. They just will.
Yep.
But we can recognize that, you know, you throw seven shutout innings. That's probably going to end up being looked in the long term. It looked at a pretty good start, whether you finish it or not.
Yep.
All right, buddy. Welcome home. We'll see you soon.
All right. Good to chat with you guys.
Welcome back, DGS on KMOX 222. Happy Friday. What do we got coming up? We have Bernie Miklas, a little more Cardinal talk at 2:30. Alvin Reed is here at 3. George Mahey at 4. 4:30, going to replay the ridiculousness of the 1 p.m. hour. We've had strong 1 p.m. hours this week.
Pretty great. Well, yeah. Earlier this week, it's all we had.
Yeah. I'm telling you, you give me 1 hour, I can fill it. I'll fill it for you. Rachel, I'm intrigued by something you have on the show sheet today about whether parents should let kids be weird.
Yeah, I understand this is kind of a huge topic, but I find it very, very interesting. So I started thinking about this because there was a TikTok that ended up going viral of this woman saying, like, hey, do not let your kids be weird. If they start getting into weird hobbies or hobbies that, like, cool kids aren't into, you need to shut it down early and just, you know, put them in soccer or something. Try to guide them towards more mainstream acceptable things, because you don't want them to be weird. It's going to make their life harder. And then people were kind of debating that and saying, well, I mean, they're a kid. Shouldn't you let them explore their interests? Other people kind of had the perspective of, okay, sometimes when a kid gets into something weird, that can lead into maybe weirder and darker things, especially if they're just like clicking around on the internet, discovering different things. Like, you can kind of go down different rabbit holes and then suddenly they're super weird. So I don't know. I just thought it was an interesting thing to mull over. Obviously, you don't want your child to be unable to relate to other people, but at what rate should you be policing their interests and trying to mold them into what you think they should be as opposed to who they actually are?
Well, as a guy whose father caught him making out with his sister's doll while he was wearing his mother's shag wig, I think I can speak on this. My mom and dad were the opposite of accepting of my weirdness. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just not okay, and, you know, everything. And I can remember having the thoughts and the emotions of, these people obviously think that I control this. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, even at like 4 and 5 years old, I didn't understand, you know, the way the brain works or anything like that. But I knew that the things that they didn't like were the things I did.
Did you feel like you were disappointing them?
Oh, God, yes. Well, they told me I was.
Yeah. I mean, how did that make you feel?
Kind of can't win, don't try. You know, just like, you know, be my bedroom was my sanctuary where I could be weird and I could, you know, play my little games and have my little guys and, you know, create worlds. But once I walked out into the living room, I had to watch my P's and Q's. Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, and it's still, the, you know, to this day, I still have that kind of in my mind. Mm.
So what's weird is, I guess, the question, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, other than cutting other people's food for them. I'm kidding.
That one, you shut down immediately.
Because, like, that, I guess what that that's what I'm trying to get to is, like, is it truly odd or is it just not something you're into or understand?
And I think that's where a lot of this big debate came from, because some people were saying, like, yep, I don't allow my kids to watch anime because that just gets you into the weirdest stuff imaginable. Well, I mean, sometimes it can lead to that. That could be like the gateway drug into weird stuff, but there are plenty of high-functioning adults contributing to a society that love anime. Like, a lot of people being Andrew's age are, like, very into it, our age and younger.
I think people, what I've learned, I think people, and your kids are no exception, are going to be who they're going to be. You know, like, if I think of Nick and Phoebe as, like, trees, sure, I probably could have done something to have effect on just how crooked they grow. But if they're growing, quote unquote, crooked, they're going to grow crooked. And the more you try to make them something they're not, I think the worse it is. Now, had I caught one of my kids torturing an animal, I'm going to inject myself.
That's definitely weird.
We're going to have talks and might
more
even see
weird.
A professional.
Disturbing.
But other than that, I was pretty...
Okay, so here's a thought experiment for you.
Okay.
When I was little and I first read the Little House on the Prairie books, I've talked about this on the show before, I had like a little prairie dress and I would put it on and I would read the books. And I would do this in the privacy of my room.
Yeah.
What if I wanted to do that? Like, I'm going to put on my dress and read my book at the park. Do you think there's any sort of obligation for them to say, okay, honey, but some of the kids, they might make fun of you? Like, do you think it's up to the parent to kind of...
I do.
I think that's okay to do.
I think fair warning's fine.
Coaching is one thing. Forbidding is another.
Yeah.
Oh, like, that's such a good way to put it.
Use it as an example, Dave. Look at, I mean, a lot of people would have said, I mean, the way you described your childhood and the way it came up, did it change you? Did it make you something different? Or was it just, all right, well, I'm not going to do that around them?
Yeah, pretty much that.
Yeah. And guess what? You turned out just fine.
What?
I mean, you're successful. You have a great career. You do fun stuff.
He's like, I do still have the wig. I still have the doll.
And it doesn't mean we're going to be mistake free, okay? But I think you turned out just fine.
A grown man should never have more than one wig story.
I mean, you have friends. Because that seems to be the worry.
Starting to feel like
mom,
an intervention.
Right?
Yeah.
Rachel's like, I'm going to pretend I have a topic.
Yeah, I think there is such a huge difference between like worrying that your kid is going to alienate themselves, but then you know there's also the parents who are like, I need my kid to be cool. Yeah. I need my kid to be popular and well liked.
Here's an example. When Nick was probably 7 and he was chunky. Nick's a very, you know, thin in shape guy now, but he was chunk. He was badunkadunk. And he wanted to be a pirate. And so we got him a pirate outfit, but what the size said on the box was not the outfit. It was tiny. And so he looked like he was dancing at a gay club in the 70s and just like skin tight and just like, you know, and we said to him, hey, buddy, we can do this, but just so you know, and he was like, I'm great. And he was great, and nothing happened, but I felt like I needed to just kind of put it out there. It's not in the words that you told me. You need my love, baby, oh so bad. You're not the only one I've ever had. Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Happy Friday, 2:36. Bernie Miklas joins us. Hey, Bern.
Happy Friday to everyone. How we doing?
Doing okay, man. Doing okay. Weird week for DGS because Wednesday we had a one-hour show. Yesterday we had a two-hour show. So this just feels like hell. It's like 4 hours. What are you kidding me? Four hours?
Listen, Dave, just some advice from your friend here. you know, Wheeler would not only talk for like 10 straight hours, but he would probably knock you on your tush and grab the mic so he could speak for 10 straight hours. That's my guy, Wheeler.
I am painfully familiar.
I did an extra 40 minutes today already, too, with Annie.
Listen, as if I should talk. Mr.
We are brothers from another mother.
Exactly.
I have a quick controversy I could bring up that's not sports related, but it's St. Louis related.
Let's hear it.
This morning, Michael Kelly from Hancock & Kelly was co-hosting with Amy, and they were doing a list of St. Louis things, and they brought up pork steaks. And Michael Kelly said, I hate pork steaks. They're terrible. They're tough. They pull your teeth out to eat them. They're useless.
I'm on team Michael Kelly.
Wow.
I had never heard of a pork steak till I got here, first of all. So I never had one. And I've had some, and they're not all bad. But in general, I would pass.
They're only going to be tough and get stuck in your teeth and whatnot if you're not cooking them long enough.
Right.
You can get pork steaks like extremely soft.
Can't cook them like a steak.
That's right.
Right.
That's my experience.
I love pork steak.
It's really about the cut of the pork steak and also how it's prepared. Mm-hmm. It really is. I mean, you know, we've all been to maybe friends or families or somebody's cookouts where, you know, it's true. I mean, a lot of the times it's overcooked, it's overdone. It is rubbery. There's the cut of it's really poor because there's gristle all over the place, and it's not that much fun. In fact, it's not fun to eat those kind. You need to take like a saw. You need a power saw to cut it. But anyway, if they're done the proper way, they're wonderful, man. They're tender, they're delicious, they got great flavor.
You gotta sear it, you gotta smoke it, then you gotta finish it in the old crock pot.
That's a good technique too. That really is. I'm not just saying this because you're the host of the Dave Glover Show. That's a good technique.
So, Bern, I know you did a video, and we were just talking to Ricky Horton about this in the last hour, that regardless, I mean, not literally regardless, because we never won another game, but, you know, within reason, regardless of what happens between now and the end of the season, we already have so much to be happy, thankful, and hopeful about.
Yeah, and I'm probably unduly influenced by people that seem to be obsessed with whether they get the wild card and using the wild card as the barometer for whether it's a successful season or not, which, you know, frankly, they're missing the entire point of the season. Now, listen, if this club could somehow wrestle the number three wild card spot, that'd be great. It would be a bonus. I'd be very happy. I'm pulling for them. But if they don't get there, it doesn't change what the objective was for the season. The objective for the season was never to do everything you could to put the best team on the field, to have the best roster you can, to say, well, let's hold off on the future. You know, we have a little opportunity now. It was never about that. This is the youngest team in baseball, average age 26.6 years. The actual money they're paying their 26-man roster this year is $44 million, which ranks 29th. And we all knew going in that this was going to be one of those seasons, like a learning season, a discovery season, a cut down season, who's going to be good enough to go forward, who's not. And they weren't going to panic if things went bad for a while. They had some rough stretches. Everybody's going to remain calm because there's a much larger picture here. And I'm one who very much believes in what they're doing for the future. And as I said at the end of my video, if they don't look, I think it'd be fantastic if they win the wild card. But that's not how I judge this season.
Yeah.
If they win the wild card or they get into the wild card, that's great. If they don't, I'm not going to lose any sleep whatsoever because my head will be down and I will be sleeping peacefully because I'll be dreaming about pennants and World Series. I don't care about your wild card, you know? So I don't understand the obsession over this because the Cardinals have come such a long way under Chaim Bloom in terms of the talent that has been brought into this organization, the enrichment of the farm system, The fact that their player development system, you know, the people down there, they know what they're doing. The Cardinals are in so much better shape for the future that, to me, the fact that they're even contention for a wild card only adds to that. And any way you slice it, this is going to be a successful season, period. Because most teams that do this, they blow everything up, right? They knock the house down. They tear everything down. And it's like, well, it's going to take 5 or 6 years. And Chaim Bloom said, no, we don't have to do that. We can be competitive. We're not going to take our eye off the future, but we can be competitive. Mm-hmm. We're going to try to be competitive. So I give him credit for that. And that's why this season will be a success, because the number one priority is being taken care of. But the bonus aspect of this, the team has actually been competitive. It's been solid. It's been pretty good.
Yeah,
that's a nice addition to what the main part of the story is.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, like, coming out of the last few years was, who are your stars, right? Who are your stars? Well, you've got two right now, two guys that have emerged at the star level, and that's not even counting your good young players like Burleson and Yvonne Herrera. Now, young is relative, but they're still in their 20s, and they're, getting to their later 20s, at least in Burleson's case, but still controllable beyond, the next couple of years. And then you look at the farm system, and you see your top three pitching prospects throw 100 miles an hour. they're all the kind of modern pitchers that we haven't seen this organization develop. And that's not even counting Quinn Matthews, who gets a lot of swing and miss, just not with 100 miles an hour. You see young power bats emerging, Baez continuing what he did last year in his breakout. Raniel Rodriguez is a 19-year-old crushing double A. You just see what's the hope is restored, I guess, is probably the easiest way to look at it. A calendar year ago, Jordan Walker wasn't a factor. J.J. Weatherill hadn't gotten here yet. And you're like, where are the stars? Who do you build around? And I think now you see that path.
There's no doubt about it. And I said it in something I wrote also in a video, and I really mean this. I first, from a media standpoint, began writing about Cardinals baseball in 1985. I was helping Rick Hummel out. Continuously, I've been writing about the Cardinals since 1989, writing and talking. I look at any list you want to look at, Baseball America, wherever, and I look at the top prospects the Cardinals have, and it is amazing to me when I did this earlier this week. I looked at like 16 of, the Cardinals' top prospects, pardon me, are pitchers. Mm-hmm. 16, including 5 of their top 8, 11 of their first 20, 8 of their first 14, more than half of their top 25 prospects. In all, 16 of their 30 top prospects are pitchers. There has never, and I mean never, been this abundance of young pitching down on the farm, young pitching that's got talent.
Yeah.
It has never been this good. And I go back to 1989 with the experience, I think, to make that judgment. It's never been this system this enriched with young pitching that's got talent.
And the kind of talent that plays now, right? Mm-hmm. It plays in the modern era where you got to have some swing and miss. And that's, if you look at this team, Bernie, the pitching staff specifically on the rotation side, there's a lot of good traits there. A lot of strike throwers, guys that are pretty efficient, like some upside too, but not a lot of bat missers. Well, if you keep a couple of those guys and then add some bat missers to it, now you're starting to round out the repertoire of the staff. And as soon as we can figure out a way to get them hitting a little bit better at home, which again hurts the opponent too, right? It's a level playing field. It's not like it's only their offense that's affected, but still figuring that out would be nice.
Well, I've been writing and talking about this literally for like 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
And so I've been trying to figure this out. They're really, I don't know that there's a solution, but I do wonder that, it's funny because I was just tapping something out about this. The Cardinals pitchers are very much protected by Busch Stadium.
Yep.
So this thing works both ways. But the one thing that I discovered, like looking at it closer today, is that the Cardinals, for example, since May 1st, they're last in the major leagues in home runs. And then, I looked at the season and I looked at like their split, the hitters between home runs at Busch Stadium, home runs on the road. And there's a gap, but there's not as big as a gap as it seems. So My point is, I think the Cardinals, I'm surprised they're not hitting more home runs on the road, you know?
Right, right.
And to me, it speaks to the lack of power at the major league level. It is it that the home ballpark, Busch Stadium, kills power. It suppresses power. But even beyond that, they don't have enough power. They have some power on the way, but you know how that is.
Yep.
There's still a lot of swing and miss with these kids. So this is really going to be a problem, or it's going to be an issue they're going to have to solve. It really is.
Byrne, tell us about Saliga before we let you go for the weekend. Welcome back, DGS 251. Alvin Reed joins us at the top of the hour. Andrew, so you took over responsibility for a friend?
I didn't take over responsibilities. I was granted responsibilities.
Okay.
But it's making me crazy.
Okay.
So has anybody heard of Discord?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, though.
So Discord, give me 1 second. I'm going to take a drink. Nobody make fun of me.
That's fine. I surprised you.
Okay, that was a long drink. You guys can make fun of me for that if you want. It was longer than I thought it was going to. I'm thirsty. I'm a little thirsty Marco over here. You guys remember when Trump called him that? All right.
Yes, we do.
I think I'm good now. not stalling or anything. So I took over as a Discord mod, which means that I have control, sort of like in a, it's sort of like a, what Discord is it's a social media app that's sort of like a chat room that you can make specific to a thing, like a business or a friend group or, you know, a community of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took over as a mod. Because in my friend's Discord channel, people keep trying to sell stuff, but they have this problem with like bots, like AI, fake people trying to scam. This is a huge problem across like all social media, essentially, right now,
mm-hmm.
is fake people trying to scam with like fake, you know, product collectibles, Pokemon cards, whatever it could be. And it has driven me crazy because there's also people who are not AI bots who are trying to sell. So now every time somebody pops up in there, because I offered, I was like, let me handle this. I know you guys don't want to deal with it. Let me handle it. I'll try and, you know, keep it clear of the riffraff. And I can't tell who's AI and who's not. And that's the core of it. The core of it is that everybody who pops up, I'm trying to determine, like, who is a fake AI scammer and who isn't. When they post the pictures, you know, what pictures are fake AI and what pictures are real? I can't determine. It's making me nuts.
Point of parliamentary procedure.
Mm-hmm.
Did your friend go to the Ozarks and he took over, or was he like, I can't do this, and you're like, let me handle this?
He just doesn't want to. He didn't feel like messing with it, and I was like, I'll do it. Because I crave power. You guys know I crave.
Yeah, duh.
Can you make it to where like you just make it a rule that you have to like submit proof of life before you try to list something?
Well, that's the thing. So you can, like, a lot of times, you guys know, like, Dave, you've been on eBay enough. If somebody sells something, a lot of times they'll put, like, today's date or whatever next to it. It's not hard to come up with something like that with AI. Like, it's not hard to ask.
No, I mean, like, they would have to message you and, like, prove to you first.
Oh.
Because there's a lot of, I'm sorry if people are out there confused if you're like not as online as we are, but there's a lot of subreddits. You're not allowed to post until you have conversed with the moderators in some way and like proved that you're not a bot or a crazy person or something.
That is a very good idea. It's a very good idea. It's a lot more work.
Well, you know, it may
mostly, I don't want the work. I just want the power.
Like, you don't want the power that much, right?
Maybe it won't be that much work because obviously if you're not a real person, they're not going to pursue a real conversation.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, it would definitely, that would be a way to filter out. Because I think most of the people are real, but there are a couple really obvious ones where it's like, and then there's other ones where it's just like, this just feels a little shady. I don't know. I would also like to kick people out who aren't local.
Well, can you make it a private group and then just accept people on a case-by-case basis?
I would prefer not to do that just because it's like a business community, you know?
What are they selling?
It's my friends who run Fortuna, the card store.
Okay.
Yeah. So they have the Discord for like the community of people who go to the store. If you want to ask questions about the store or products or something, you can ask it in there. So I don't want to like shut it down and make it, you know, inaccessible. But it's hard to figure out these days who is and isn't a real person. It's weird.
They got to send you credit card, social security, driver's license.
Picture of them on a toilet.
$15 payment.